Welcome to Las Vegas Money Resource with Travis Scribner, Managing Partner of Westpac Wealth Partners. Travis Scribner is a registered representative, certified exit planner, and a financial advisor of Park Avenue Securities, LLC, 7 East Hanover Square, New York, New York, 10004, and Westpac Wealth Partners, 8906 Spanish Ridge Avenue, Suite 110, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89148. This show is for informational purposes only. Individual risk and investment objectives must be reviewed prior to making any recommendations. For more shows like the one you're about to hear, visit the website at LasVegasMoneyResource.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes for new episodes. And now your host, Travis Scribner.
And welcome to another episode of Las Vegas Money Resource. Your host, Travis Scribner, Managing Partner with Westpac Wealth Partners. In studio, John Helderman, the President of Helderman Business Management and Consulting. That's a mouthful. Did I nail that?
Yes, that's perfect.
Nailed it. John, thank you for being with us this morning.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So same format as always, man. I always like to get some background. I love doing this show, just the interaction with people and learning their stories and how they came to be who they are today is always inspiring to me, because I think so many people have very similar backgrounds or very similar ways in which they grew up and the paths that they choose to get to where they are now. So give me a little bit of background and our listeners a little bit of background, John, on how you came to be in Vegas and how you came to be doing what it is that you're doing.
Great. Well, I grew up on the East Coast. I lived for the first 25 years in North Carolina, went to NC State for undergrad and UNC for law school. So
how'd that work out?
Well, I always cheered for NC State. Your heart lies with your
undergrad
team,
right? Yeah.
Unfortunately, everybody in North Carolina cheers for the Tar Heels. And so it's an uphill battle.
Yeah. Well, you're like the third in the pecking order, right? Cause it's like North Carolina and Duke.
Well, Duke somehow has surpassed us. NC State's the biggest school in the state. And it's part of the same UNC system that UNC is, but UNC has the School of Journalism, and the School of the Medical School, and the School of it turns out the legislators, and so they always get first
dibs on everything.
Yeah, it's tough being a second class citizen. But NC State's the one turning out the engineers, and they're the ones who are breaking new ground.
Perfect. So grew up in North Carolina.
That's right.
Went to NC State, law school for UNC. So did you grow up wanting to be an attorney?
Yes. And it's great. You know, if you're an in-state resident in North Carolina, the tuition is wildly subsidized. I came out of school, I think I had $40,000 in debt. And that's nothing compared to everybody else.
That's so completely off topic. I always love it because it's my show, so I guess I can talk about whatever I want. Completely off topic there. Did you have any kind of idea? Because obviously student loans are like a huge conversational piece now with how much debt some students are entering the workforce with. Were you cognizant of that years ago about like, oh, hey, I'm going to this school because it's more subsidized. I'm going to come out with less student loans.
It was definitely on my mind. I know it's not as big, or it wasn't as big of a conversation topic back then. But when you're in North Carolina, the subsidy is fantastic. I think I paid $8,000 a year for law school at a top 25 school at UNC. I got into a couple of other schools. I was could have gone to Cornell in upstate New York, which is obviously Ivy League. Price is a lot higher, and I would have been away from my family. And it actually kind of worked out. Not to sidetrack us, but my mom died when I was in law school, and so by being in North Carolina, I was able to be close to her.
Yeah.
And if I'd been in upstate New York, it would have been a lot more challenging to make that trip back and forth.
No, I mean, it's interesting to see. So I think there was a generation where no one talked about student loans. It was just like, hey, take as much as you want. You're going to go to college. You're going to get a great job. And then now all of a sudden, you had the people around our age who came out with, massive student loan debt. Whereas now it's a conversation. I think students are much more cognizant and, aware of, hey, I'm going to school, for a degree in secondary education or whatever it may be, where I'm going to make, 60 grand a year. It may not make that much sense to have $200,000 of student loans when I enter the workforce.
Well, I hope people are making those decisions. It seems like there's part of the conversation is, I want to do this obscure education and I want you to forgive my debt, right? If that's the way it goes, then I'm going to feel like a sucker for paying mine back.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. Like, that's the running conversation now as the student loan debt crisis continues to rise. People are saying, hey, should we forgive this debt? And I feel the exact same way. She was like, wait a second. For those that did pay it off,
And I'm putting money aside for my kids, right? So it's like, I've paid for mine and I'm supposed to pay for my kids, and now I'm going to pay for some strangers,
That's a tough pill to swallow. Yeah. You and I are going to get along just fine.
Right.
So you're in North Carolina. How do you end up in Vegas?
So I spent 5 years in Atlanta. After graduating law school, took a job in Atlanta, actually in the world of Big Four public accounting.
Yep.
And the reason why is because I wanted to combine business and law. And so what I was doing there is consulting with companies to help them save taxes and restructuring them and doing
that right out of law school?
That's right out of law school.
Oh, man. So, did you not want to be a practicing attorney, or what was the story there?
It never really appealed to me. Plus, when I was in law school, the things that really got my attention were things like bankruptcy and tax, which had very
super fun
very,
stuff.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, boring. If everybody else doesn't want to do it, then there's a niche for you, you know?
Completely agree.
And so, those two areas of law have very detailed codes. It's math oriented, you know. So I like math, and
that'd be
pretty
appealing too. I mean, I would imagine for one of those firms wanting to hire you, you know,
right.
You've got somebody coming out with a degree in law as opposed to a degree in accounting.
It was a new thing for them, and I went into I was with KPMG at the time, and I led their law school recruiting because I, you know, obviously had just come out of it, and so I went around to Wake Forest and UNC and a number of other schools in the region. And recruited more people to.
Yeah, it's
going to
be powerful for him to see, because it's not like it's a normal corporate recruiter. It's like, well, hey, this is a guy who actually went to law school like us.
Right. And you don't have that same big law pressure to you know, knock out 2,500 billable hours. You know,
it's brutal, man.
Yeah,
it's,
you have to work a lot to be able to bill 2,500 hours.
Dude, it's a meat grinder. I talked to any of my friends or attorney or clients who are attorneys, and it's rough, man, when they're you know tracking those 6-minute billable hours. It's a rough go of things. So you're in Atlanta.
So I got married in 2002, and my wife and I decided we want to try a different part of the country before I had kids. We looked at a few different areas out west and settled on Vegas because we could both keep our jobs and come out here. We weren't so passionate about moving.
Which other cities did you look at? I'm always interested.
Well, we looked at Denver, we looked at Phoenix, and we looked at a place in Montana. And as soon as my wife saw the place in Montana that was below freezing 200 days a year, she's like, forget that. And so Denver, the cost of living was higher. Phoenix was a push, but like I said, we could both keep our jobs. We were both with Deloitte and Touche at the time.
Okay.
She had been with Anderson, and then Anderson, went under with Enron. And we were able to keep our jobs at Deloitte, move out here, be able to buy a house because you didn't have an interruption in pay history or anything like that. And so we moved out here in 2003.
So were you able to just move out here and work remote?
She moved to the Vegas office,
okay.
And then I was a consultant. So
you're good to go.
You know, have suitcase, we'll travel.
Yeah. So Vegas, because of the work transition and the cost of the living, went out.
Right.
So 2003, you got here like right as the town was.
Yeah, we got here on the upswing. We bought a house, it was the costs were the prices were coming up. I remember talking to my wife in 2005, and I said, we should sell this house. We could make a lot of money on it. And she was pregnant with our first kid, and she's like, no way.
She was nesting off.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, we wrote it up and then wrote it down. And then we moved in 2013 to our new house.
Had you been to Vegas before?
Yes. I've been to Vegas a few times. And so I was already kind of familiar with it. Had been here during the summer for my bachelor party way back when.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I know what the heat's like. And but never really spent time in the suburbs, and I don't think people do.
When people like have been to Vegas usually before, but they've never like experienced like the actual community of it.
Well, we came out on a couple scouting trips, and you get out the suburbs, and there's some really nice areas. We live in Summerlin. We're dedicated to it, and that's where we're.
So I was going to ask, are you Team Summerlin or Team Green Valley?
Yeah, we're definitely Team Summerlin.
It's I never ceases to amaze me here that getting someone to drive 20 minutes in this town takes an act of God, whereas in other cities that's a normal commute.
Well, we came from Atlanta. My morning commute was 1.5 hours, and I went 4.5 miles.
Yeah.
And, so the traffic's never been a problem here, but I just,
But now, how often do you go to Green Valley?
Hardly ever.
Ever?
Hardly ever. So.
Yeah, it's the funniest thing. We'll be back with John Helderman, the president of Helderman Business Management and Consulting, after these messages on Las Vegas Money Resource. Welcome back to Las Vegas Money Resource. Your host, Travis Scribner, managing partner with Westpac Wealth Partners. Find the old shows, LasVegasMoneyResource.com, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes. I think that's all of them. Nailed it. Here with John Helderman, the president John Helderman, the president of Helderman Business Management and Consulting. John, you moved to Vegas. You and your wife have some kids. To have some kids.
Yep.
Build a family. Fall in love with this great community.
That's right.
Do you think this was going to be a temporary stop? Or?
We thought we'd be here for 5 years or so.
That's what everybody says.
And it's just you get spoiled by it. And growing up on the East Coast, you come here, lack of humidity, right? We don't have mosquitoes. Golf ball goes further. The winter is mild. My in-laws are out here every December and January staying with us because it's just better. And the climate's better. And
so 5 years turned into forever.
That's right.
Tale as old as time in Vegas. So you're doing consulting work for Deloitte. You got to walk me through this career progression. What happened after that? Because you're not clearly not still there.
Well, exactly. So I was with Deloitte. I was traveling, but then we started having kids, and I transitioned into a much more traditional sort of tax role where I had clients and was helping them with their issues. Instead of traveling around the country, helping a different client every project, started just having a stable of clients, and did that for up to 2008, and then moved to Caesars in 2009. Caesars Entertainment. It was Harrah's Entertainment at the time.
Yeah.
They changed the name. And they had been headquartered in Memphis, Tennessee, and were relocating their headquarter functions to Vegas, obviously, makes sense. They had digested the Harris-Caesars merger that had happened a couple years before. But it was the housing crisis. Nobody from Memphis wanted to move from the Bible Belt to Sin City. And so they had to rebuild the whole tax department. So I went over there with a few of the folks, and we rebuilt the whole thing.
I was going to say, was that probably like kind of fortuitous timing for you with what was going on with the economy in 08
right.
to like all of a sudden get out of, you know, the normal accounting type of work to get into something more, I guess, structured with the company?
It was a better fit for me. You know, I liked the corporate environment and was able to go over there. And, you know, we turned over the whole department twice, right? First you hire for out of desperation, and then you start replacing folks with people of your choice, and end up with a great team. Yeah, it's it was a great team, and very proud of the group there. And Caesars Tax Department is still most of the folks I hired are still there.
Oh wow,
and it's good culture within a company.
So I mean, it kind of came out of left field, right, with doing a rebuild because
right.
you know I would imagine they were originally anticipating a lot of people moving just to keep their jobs and stay, and then people just said pass,
right,
not leaving Memphis to go to Vegas.
Right, I think it was a cultural thing. I think it was a cultural thing. People liked being in the South, and unless you've spent time in Vegas, you don't realize what a great place it is. And I think a lot of folks preferred to stay there near their families and, you know, with their schools and things like that.
So did that change what your job function was going to be? Because did you initially come on to say, hey, you know, I'm going to work in this department, and then all of a sudden nobody moves, and it's like, oh, wait a second, I've actually got to build this.
Right, yeah. I actually came over to do strategic planning for them, which was a lot like what I had been doing in public accounting. But when the rest of the team from Memphis didn't come over, I had to, you know, do everything. You know, I described it with the guys, I started with a couple of guys that both left pretty quickly, but we talked about it. We said we're trying to build the ship and sail it at the same time because the tax calendar does not stop. You have to file. The IRS does not care whether you relocated your
headquarters. Heartless.
They could not care less. And all the states have to have tax returns filed. And a lot of states are depending on the casino industry to pay, you know, a big part of their budgets. And so you can't just sit here and say, hey, give us a year to catch up.
Yeah, we'll get back with you guys.
Yeah. So that was a challenge.
Yeah, 100%. So did you eventually rebuild the department.
Got the department built, and I was trying to do the strategic planning at the same time, and actually hit a home run with that. We ended up, because of the downturn in the economy, they changed the tax laws, and when people were refinancing bonds, they had a lot of cancellation of indebtedness income. Some of it was sort of illusory because bond pricings were so depressed, and so we were able to plan aggressively and carry back some losses and got a $225 million tax refund, which
seems like a hero.
Yeah, our department won an award, and it's called the Chairman's Award for Caesars. And so I got that. And, you know, I asked the CFO at the time, I'm like, what happened to that money? He said, oh, well, you just used it for an interest payment because it's Caesars, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where the cash goes.
Man. So how long were you with Caesars?
So I was, I did the tax department for 4 years, and then I switched over to finance because, I wanted to broaden my horizons, and so I did 4 more years in the finance function. Most of that time was spent leading the capital planning team. Caesars, even though they've had financial distress, you still end up spending money to expand and preserve the assets. In fact, the creditors want you to spend the money. They get stressed out if they don't think you're taking care of the assets. And so that capital planning team, we administered the program to spend over $500 million a year in CapEx, whether it's hotel rooms or whether it was new F&B projects. Some of it's maintenance stuff, you know, elevators, roofs, parking decks, and then a variety of other projects for IT and marketing. And so every one of those things, we tried to look at it and understand what the ROI was and understand, is this the best use of our money? There's a lot of politics involved in there. Sometimes you find a project and you say, this is a complete dog, let's kill it. And you find out the COO wants to do it, and so it's going to get done.
So you're going to get that done.
Yeah.
Did you make that move to working on the finance side of things, just because were you just ready for the next challenge?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, tax is great, and tax was very, very good to me, but it's people are always going to see you as the tax guy, and it tends to be viewed as an after the fact thing. Hey, we've done this corporate transaction. Now let's bring in the tax guys to deal with the consequences.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're the finance guy, you're involved in the planning and you're on the front end of the conversation.
So you're like, wait a second, man, I'm tired of being the guy coming in for cleanup.
Right.
I want to be the guy doing the actual planning.
That's right.
So easy transition for you?
It was easier because I was still at Caesars and I was a known quantity. You know, I'd won this award and we'd done great work in the corporate tax department. If I had jumped to another company and tried to do finance right out of the gate, I think it would have been a harder transition because, you know, as it was, I was able to leverage relationships and help, you know, get people to help me do a good job at this new job.
Well, you also had a track record of success within the company where people right. are like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing.
They know I'm going to work hard at it, and it might take a little bit of a learning curve, but they knew I would get there.
So when you make that transition to the new role, how long were you in that position for?
So I did the capital planning team for about 2.5 years, and then my last year at Caesars, I moved out to the properties, which was, you know, people might view that as unglamorous, moving from corporate to a property level role. But I was the VP of finance for the Flamingo, the Link, and the Cromwell Hotel and Casinos. And there it's like moving from headquarters out to the battlefield, right? You're doing a completely different function. You're dealing with departmental budgets. You're dealing with, P&L reviews and trying to understand why is this restaurant failing, you know, or why, you know, what's our pool season going to look like? And it was very tactical and great experience.
So same type of mental thought process for you there of like, hey, you know, I've worked, you know, on a corporate level now. What's next?
Right. Right. Just continue to broaden the horizons because being at the properties, that's the path up. I know you can do a lot of things in corporate, but if you don't have the battlefield experience, you're not gonna have that much of a resume.
It seems like that would be the fun gig to me.
It was. There was a lot of fun. The team at the properties, there's a lot of good chemistry there, and the folks like each other. Even when you're talking about tough things, it's very much of a team environment, which I found that to be refreshing because corporate can be a little bit of a backbiting thing. And at the property, it's like, hey, let's figure out how to make this department succeed, and everybody's kind of pitching in for it.
It seems like a really common common goal amongst everyone there, just to move the ball forward. We'll be back with John Helderman, the president of Helderman Business Management and Consulting, after these messages on Las Vegas Money Resource. Welcome back to Las Vegas Money Resource. Your host, Travis Scribner, managing partner with Westpac Wealth Partners. John Helderman, president of Helderman Business Management and Consulting, in the studio today with us. So transitioning from a multitude of roles with Caesars Entertainment.
Right.
Looking through your bio, there was a bit more to it, right? I think for so many people, you reach a certain level of success and then you kind of get there and you start asking yourself, how do I give back or how do I help, you know, the community as a whole or society as a whole? And I think that's exactly what happened with you.
That's right. That's right. I've got kids. I want them to see me giving back. And you know, it's sort of a responsibility. If you're successful in our society, you need to help folks out. And so I had reached out to the Caesars Foundation while I was there to see what board roles they might have. Caesars Foundation is great. They support a number of different nonprofits across the country, not just in Vegas, but across the country where they have properties. And they gave me some options. And the one that jumped out to me was Goodwill Industries of Southern Nevada. The mission appealed to me, helping people get jobs. That's what Goodwill's purpose is.
That's what I was going to ask. I think everyone's familiar with Goodwill, like the brand name, right. I guess, of it, but what they actually do.
Right. It was an eye opener for me. What hooked me was when I came and took the tour and talked to career coaches and understood really what that mission is. The thrift stores are a means to an end. Now, the thrift stores do employ people who would struggle to find work elsewhere, but the whole point of the nonprofit is to employ career coaches to help other folks who are coming off the street. Sometimes they're coming out of the military. Sometimes they're homeless. Sometimes they have other challenges, to help those folks find jobs. And that really appealed to me.
Why?
Because it's not a handout.
Yep.
It's a hand up. That's one of the slogans is we're not just trying to, you know, feed you or give you a place to stay for free. We want you to have a job so that you can feed yourself and you can pay for your own place and you can kind of join society and be a taxpayer like everybody else.
No, I like, I'm going to steal that hand up, not a handout. Yeah. 100%. So that appealed to you right away, right? You wanted to give back. I think again, like that's really improving society as a whole. If you can teach more people and help more people to be fully functioning by themselves, as opposed to, you know,
and a lot of people want to work.
Yeah.
They want to work. Sometimes there's a skill gap. Sometimes they don't have role models. They don't come from an environment where people are working and they need the training. So Goodwill offers workshops on workplace readiness, how to dress for success, you know, what to put in your resume, how to do a cover letter. And then they help with the actual job searches and, you know, do mock interviews and try to help people get the position. And then, once people do land a position, or if they're just on the 1 yard line, sometimes they just need a bus pass to be able to get the interviews, or they need a clothing voucher to be able to get work boots or black uniform pants or whatever it is. And so sometimes it's just that little nudge. They've got they're on the 1 yard line. You just push them in.
And so Goodwill as a whole, I mean, it's all encompassing around those types of areas.
That's right. That's right. That's the mission. That's why everybody's on the board. And that's what I did when I was at Caesars. So I joined the board in the fourth quarter of 2015.
Okay.
And it was right when Goodwill was issuing $22 million of the bonds, which I was the new guy on the board.
Yeah.
It was already in motion, so I didn't really ask a lot of questions, but that turned out to be a pretty important event for the organization.
So talk to me about your I mean, because obviously you progressed with Goodwill, right? You took on more and more responsibility there.
Right. So I was still with Caesars. I left Caesars in April of 2017, really to start my own company, and was in the, you know, working on the business plan. But in May of 2017, about 3 weeks after I left Caesars, there was sort of a crisis at Goodwill, and the board said, "Hey, can you step in as the interim CEO while we kind of get things fixed and hire a full-time person?" I got in there, and it was much worse than the board knew from a cash standpoint.
How long do you think you're going to be doing that for?
I signed over 90 days, and it turned out to be a little over 2 years. So, you know, it was a great turnaround story, and I'm happy that I did it. When I stepped in there, they had less than $1 million in the bank, and the monthly payroll was 1.6, and the rent just to stay in the facilities was $600,000, and so we had to juggle some things, and it was not an efficiently run company, and so that's where I really brought.
I mean,
that's
a massive undertaking, right? I mean, you go in, you sign on for what you think is 90 days, and it ends up being 2 years,
right? Well, I stepped in May, and over the summer it became apparent that we were going to have to file for Chapter 11. And once we filed, I told the board, and I told the team, I told the employees, I said, "Look, I'm not going to abandon you in this, right? I've got Chapter 11 experience from Caesars, and also, you know, understood it from law school. And I'm not going to just take you into Chapter 11 and then abandon you." It took a lot longer to get out of the Chapter 11 than we expected. We thought it'd be maybe a 10-month thing, and it turned into a 20-month thing. But once we emerged, and the turnaround really has got a great trajectory, Goodwill's doing wonderful now. I was able to hire my replacement and transition with him, and it's been great.
So in your mind, were you just like, "Hey, I'm here until this job gets done"?
Right, right. And that's kind of who I am, right? I'm not going to take on responsibility and then kind of, you know, do it halfway or run from it. And, you know, we just had a lot of turnaround work to do. It was a very close thing. You know, you look at it, your revenue is shrinking and you're faster than you're cutting costs. And finally we fixed it. October 2017 was probably the first month we were cash flow positive. And,
how'd you fix it?
Well, so we had, when we took out the bonds, right? So the bonds were in December of 2015. They had a lot of covenants with them. The company was poorly managed and missed a covenant at the end of 2016. And the consequences of that were you need to bring in a management consultant. Management consultant comes in and says, "Oh, you got to fix this, this, and this." Under the terms of the covenants, you had to do that stuff. And so the management consultant, most of what he said was great, but he also made some, he recommended some changes that wrecked the revenue and hurt sales in the stores. And that's really the main cash flow Goodwill has. Goodwill is not really one of these big philanthropic nonprofits where we get, you know, millions of dollars from donations. And so you have to make money in the thrift stores to be able to make the company go. And so once we gave those changes the college try, we said, "This isn't working." We went back to our old sales structure. So that was a big part of it. I also closed 4 underperforming stores, did some layoffs, especially at corporate, cut the corporate overhead, and brought the cost structure down. And then when we filed for Chapter 11, that got us some relief from our trade creditors, right? When you file for Chapter 11, you still have to pay your rent, you still have to pay all your administrative fees and everything, all your costs that are coming in every day. You can't just buy pallets or boxes or something from people and not pay for them. But it bought us time to reorganize, and we rebuilt the team. Got a new COO in. I let go the CFO I inherited and replaced him. Did both roles for about 5 months in there. Wow. Myself. So it was definitely a challenge, but the cash situation is much better now. The covenants, we rebuilt those with the bondholders in the Chapter 11. Fixed the amortization schedule for the debt, renegotiated almost all the leases, so it was a lot of work.
And then you turn the keys over, and now just don't crash the bus.
Right, right. So I expect I'm going to go back on the board. Obviously, they have to vote me back on, but I expect I'll go back on the board at the end of the year.
You should carry enough, you know, clout to stay on the board. I would think. And then that leads you to your current position. It sounds like this was almost like a perfect segue into what you were going to do, because you wanted to go start, you were starting your own consulting business.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, and now with the turnaround at Goodwill, like I said, it took a little longer than I expected, but I did a good job as CEO. I like being CEO. It's a new experience from being a cog in the wheel at Caesars, but I got in there, we made a bunch of good decisions. We took some chances, and really a lot of it's about team building and culture. And that's really, culture makes a big part of my philosophy, and fixing that at Goodwill was one of the things that helped us turn the corner.
No, that's perfect. That leads us in perfectly to the current stage of your life. So we'll be back with John Helderman, president of Helderman Business Management and Consulting, after these messages on Las Vegas Money Resource. Welcome back to Las Vegas Money Resource. Your host, Travis Scribner, managing partner with Westpac Wealth Partners. John Helderman, president of Helderman Business Management and Consulting, is with us today. So former CEO of Goodwill.
Right.
Now actually able to get your consulting company up and running.
That's right. That's right.
Were you So different roles for you. Like, you've worn a lot of different hats over the course of your career. Did you see business ownership or consulting as the end game for you at some point, or was it just a natural progression of what you had done?
Well, I've always kind of had an entrepreneurial spirit and tried to, you know, be creative and have ideas where whatever role I've been in. Sometimes when you're the tax guy or whatever, they don't want to hear your ideas. But it's always been something I've strived to do. And you know, it's one of these things that if I don't try to work for myself, if I don't give it a shot, it'll drive me crazy. You know, I'll always regret.
Where do you think that came from?
I think it's a desire for independence. You know, I mean, wanting to have more time to be with my family. If I'm not going to be with my family, if I'm going to be working really hard, I'd like for it to be for myself.
I'm always interested. Some people are, you know, I've said the quote on air a lot of different times. You know, it's credited to Thomas Jefferson. He says, "I choose dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery."
That's great.
And I absolutely love it. And I always think of, like, the entrepreneurial spirit is that dangerous freedom. It's the people who choose to go out alone. But most people in life choose, like, hey, I want to go through easy, quiet. Like, it's maybe not as freeing or as liberating, but I know everything's going to be okay.
It's definitely a safer route to work for somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They've taken the risk and I've got, you know, 4 kids, and I want them to see that you can do something else, that's possible to work for yourself. Even if they all just get day jobs somewhere, I want them to see that that's an option.
Family of entrepreneurs at all, or was it like just, were you the trailblazer?
My dad tried to start a business. It didn't work out. But when I was a kid, you know, he worked hard at it. He was trying to build freedom for his family.
You know,
he wanted something to hand down to me. And even though I don't really expect my kids to become business consultants down the road or take over a family business, it's something I want them to see that, hey, look, you don't have to take a day job for somebody else. It's great if you do. That there's a lot of success can be had there, but there are other paths.
Yeah, well, and that's you took the next words out of my mouth. It's about finding the path that's correct for you, and you know, if you do see something out there, having the courage to actually move towards it. So that's awesome. So talk to me about what the plan is with Helderman Business Management and Consulting.
Right. Well, you know, I've actually seen so many companies when I was in public accounting for 11 years. Right. I was a consultant, dropped in, worked with many different companies in a lot of different industries, excuse me, banking, transportation, telecom, just did a ton of things. So, and one of the things that appealed to me about it was getting to learn, how does everybody make money? Right. You go into all these different businesses. That's the first thing you need to understand is how they make money. Where are their costs? What are their pinch points? You know, what are their threats? And learning about the new businesses, that's very interesting. I, you know, spent all the time with Caesars doing different functions and kind of wearing different hats, getting to broaden my horizons. And then the last 2 years working with leading Goodwill through all of its challenges, being the decision maker and doing that turnaround, making a lot of hard decisions. Sometimes when you're the CEO, you're getting paid the big bucks. Part of that job is giving bad news to good people and cutting those costs and making the tough decisions. Lots of times people who are in a failing company, they're so far down in the weeds that they don't see efficiencies that need to be realized, even if it means reducing the overhead, people you've worked with for a long time. And I'm not a chainsaw guy. It's not my desire to do that.
But I mean, you said that perfectly, right? Tough conversations with or bad conversations with good people.
Right.
That's perfectly said.
And sometimes as companies are growing, if they don't grow their infrastructure properly, you can end up really constrained. And that's one of the things that happened at Goodwill. They doubled in size, but kept all the same team, and people just got outgrown.
This seems like it is like the perfect career transition for you, because like just hearing your story, a trademark of your entire career has seemed to be what's next, right? Like, you know, whether it was consulting, whether it was the legal recruiting, whether like what's next, like what's the next challenge? And whereas what you're doing now, there's constantly going to be what's the next challenge, because it's going to be, hey, let me fix whatever company I'm with. That's good to go. Don't crash your bus. What's next?
Right. Right. One of the things I am proud of is just being intellectually curious. You know, how does this company work? How does it, you know, what makes it tick? What are the interrelated parts? And so my plan as a consultant, you know, you come in first thing, understand what's there now, right? Protect the revenue. Don't do anything drastic. That's one of the things they screwed up at Goodwill was wrecking the revenue. So understand how the money is made. Protect that, but then you start asking what people might think are dumb questions, right? But really what they are is looking at things with fresh eyes, right? Why are you doing things this way? You know,
that's how we've always done it.
Right. Describe your process for this or that. And if all these people are touching the same piece of data, why, you know, is there a better way to do it? One of the things that they talk about in Silicon Valley, I forget which Silicon Valley genius had this approach, but their philosophy is, what would this be like if it was easy, right? And you work backwards from there. Okay. And sometimes, you know, that when you answer that question, you're like, oh, that sounds like magic. Not necessarily. There's a lot of great technology now and AI that can help you do things that used to take a lot of people.
When you make that transition from Caesars, right? I guess the peaceful slavery. Right. Like, what was the conversation like with your wife? Of like, hey, like, you know, I'm going to start my own gig.
This is a conversation that, you know, she tries to have every day, right? Which is she's also an accountant. She's a tax. She's a VP of tax for one of the big casino companies here in town. And you know, I think she doesn't want to see me being lazy or being too casual about things because we have four kids to put through college and mortgage and everything else. But her working the day job gives us a lot of stability, or gives a lot of stability on that side, and kind of frees me up to take risks. So I'm very grateful for her. She is supportive to a point. It's one of these things: the business needs to either take off or it needs to fail fast, and I'll go back into the machine. I don't mind the concept of working for somebody else, but I gotta try.
Yeah, you want to at least take the shot, man. And with your resume, with your track record of success, I think it lends itself perfectly to consulting, perfectly to riding the ship for companies that could potentially be wildly profitable,
right?
Just with a number of tweaks that are made to them. So having someone come in with the experience that you've had, I think makes an awful lot of sense. John, if somebody wants to learn more about you guys, your company, your consulting company, and how you may be able to help them, what should they do?
So I've got a website. It's www.johnhelderman.com. And you can also, you know, reach me on my cell phone. I know that's happened before on your show, people giving out their cell phone. I'll go ahead and do that if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
It's 702-813-2340. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Again, just John Helderman. It's not a common name, so
you should be the only one who pops up.
That's right.
So that's John Helderman, HELDERMAN.
That's right.
Nailed it.com. So johnhelderman.com. He's a brave soul. He gave out his cell phone number, 702-813-2340.
That's right.
2340. Give John a call. See if you can help. John, thank you so much for being with us on Las Vegas Money Resource.
I really appreciate it, Travis. Thank you.
Got it. We'll see everyone next week. As always, be good to one another, and we'll see you soon.